Welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb. Today, our guest is Lawrence Reed for this particular segment. He is with the Foundation for Economic Education, and we're going to talk about the subject of the Great Depression and how it was solved. And the reason for even talking about this is here we are in the spring of 2020, and we're looking at an economic meltdown that we have not seen in this country since the time of the Great Awakening. And that's, of course, because of the coronavirus crisis and the response to it as well. Lawrence, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Hey, my pleasure, Jerry.
All right. First of all, the Great Depression is relevant to us today because of the parallels with the COVID-19 crisis. Would you agree with that?
Well, it is. By several measures, we are approximating some of the worst of the Great Depression. The unemployment rate in the 1930s peaked out in the vicinity of 25% to 27%, and I don't know that we're quite that high yet, but the next month's figures might show that we're getting pretty close.
Yeah, and then I saw a study, and I didn't bear in and, you know, look at the actual, read the actual story, but it said something like, shocking study, 82% of Americans want to receive monthly stimulus checks. And that means that they would receive money for basically not working, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, a lot of people might find that quite comfortable. But I think the bottom line is people instinctively and surely, I hope I'm right about this, understand that this is not sustainable, that you can't have a modern functioning economy when the government is running trillions of dollars in spending beyond what it takes in, borrowing like crazy, and people are having to stay home, or wanting to stay home in some cases, simply collecting a check from the government. I mean, that's an extraordinarily harmful economic scenario that is not sustainable.
Yeah. Okay. Now, we understand, I mean, generally it is said over and over and over that, you know, FDR and his policies saved us from the Great Depression. And that's basically the way the history books are written and understood and so forth. But I understand that you think maybe some of FDR's policies actually exacerbated the problem and made it worse over time. And it was only World War II that really got us out of the Depression.
Well, there's a lot of truth to what you've just said, Jerry, not so much on the war being the solution. I'll touch on that in a moment. But when FDR ran for president in 1932 against the incumbent Herbert Hoover, he attacked Hoover for being a big government, tax-happy spender.
Wow.
In fact, which is not what history textbooks tend to teach. But FDR was right in 1932 because Hoover had more than doubled the income tax in 1932. Back in 1930, he had raised tariffs to an all-time high, virtually closing the border to goods, which really hammered any industry, agriculture in particular, that depended upon foreign markets. And he had spent like crazy. And when FDR ran in 32, he said, if I'm elected, I will cut the federal government by 25%. But, of course, he did quite the opposite. Upon election, he just did more of what Hoover had done, times 10. And the result was the Depression persisted, probably about 7 years longer than it would otherwise have if FDR had left it alone.
Wow. So, in other words, you're saying that the common popular history is wrong. And by the way, history matters, and I just heard the disturbing statement. I hope this is not true, but supposedly the History Channel has hired now Bill Clinton to be a key consultant on anything related to American history as far as the presidents are concerned. That's not going to be good for, you know, we're not necessarily going to learn true history then.
No, Bill Clinton has never been known as a careful student of history. He's a partisan, and I don't expect much good to come out of his involvement with that.
Okay, so suppose you were an advisor to Hoover first and then FDR. What would you say in terms of how do we deal with this Great Depression, 25 to 27% unemployment?
Well, when Hoover was president from early 1929 until early 1933, we at first did not have a depression. After the stock market crashed in the fall of 29 and for several months, we only had a recession. As late as the spring of 1930, unemployment was not even at 10% yet. The stock market had rebounded and regained half the ground it had lost. What took a recession and quickly made it a full-scale depression was what Herbert Hoover and the Congress did in June of 1930. That was to pass the Smoot-Hawley tariff, which raised tariffs to an all-time high and virtually shut down world trade. I first would have said to Hoover, don't do that. And most economists today look back on that and say that was terrible. And then 2 years later, he signed into law a substantial increase in taxes. The top rate, in fact, rose from 24 to 65% in one fell swoop in the midst of a depression. So I would have constantly been telling Hoover, stop intervening, stop this crazy taxing and spending. You're only preventing recovery. This could be a short but sharp recession if you leave the economy alone. And then when FDR was president, I would have advised him the same. Certainly, he attacked Hoover for raising taxes, but by the time FDR was done, the top tax rate would go from 65% to 91%.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, he did. In fact, at one point, he proposed a 100% income tax rate on all incomes over $25,000. I mean, he was just intervening all over the place, doubled spending in the first term, imposing all kinds of new regulations, paying farmers not to grow, fixing prices. I mean, what he did simply prolonged the depression by about 7 years.
Oh, man. And you think of all the misery involved in that. Now, what about the things like the Public Works Association? I mean, that seems like a good idea to the common layperson. Here you've got these unemployed people, let's say, who want to work, then the government would hire them to build dams that need to be built or roadways, et cetera.
Well, on the surface, that looks like a good thing to do. Certainly paying them to do something is better than paying them to do nothing.
Yeah.
But if FDR hadn't been doing all these other things that kept us in depression, well, then those relief programs and those work programs wouldn't have been necessary at all. Even so, I'm not saying I would have supported them back then. I would have been urging the president to stop making the situation worse and pointing out that ultimately simply going deeper into debt and sending checks to people is not the answer to a depression caused by government intervention in the first place.
Okay, now let's focus on COVID-19. Now, if there's anything else you want to say about the Great Depression and lessons learned from it, or lessons we should learn.
Move on.
Yeah, okay, great. How do you rate the President Trump in this whole crisis?
Well, as you might expect, really, of any policymaker, any president, in a time of such unprecedented crisis, it's a mixed bag. There might be something to the argument that perhaps he should have acted sooner, but, you know, nobody knew the depths of problems that this virus would create. I can see a rationale for some limited kind of lockdown and social distancing from the beginning, but increasingly, as I look back, I think the states in particular, not just the federal government, but the states went overboard and may end up being more counterproductive in solving the problem by the lockdowns than if they had simply allowed a herd immunity to take effect, and if they had just taken care to focus on the most vulnerable and otherwise allowed other people to go about their business.
This herd immunity you refer to, this is, if I can paraphrase it or summarize it as I understand it, it's the idea that actually minor exposure to the coronavirus among a wider population might not be too bad, you know, given certain common sense restrictions, so that we become immune to it. Most of us do. Now, the scary part about that is, well, what about the most vulnerable among us?
Well, those being the elderly, we now know that rather clearly. And some of what governments have done have worked against the safety of the elderly. I mean, what about these governors like Cuomo and Whitmer? Yeah, sending COVID-19 patients into nursing homes by order. And the nursing home deaths in this pandemic have been just wildly out of proportion. And in great measure, because that's where these politicians have been forcing people, COVID-19 patients, to go.
Isn't it interesting, by the way, just a quick aside, but if you look at the 50 states, these are little lessons, mini lessons right now in freedom or tyranny. And you know, honestly, a commonality is if they're pro-life, the leadership tends to be very pro-freedom, and if they're very, pro-abortion rights and all this, and very liberal in the spending and so forth, they tend to be anti-freedom. It's almost like case studies going on in front of our very eyes.
A direct correlation. In fact, there's even a direct correlation between the progressive side of the spectrum and governors who share that view and these orders to send the COVID-19 patients into nursing homes. The governors that have done that are all so-called progressive Democrat governors, ones who favor they're pro-choice on abortion, some of them even right up to the day of birth, and maybe even afterwards in some cases, like Governor Northam of Virginia. But these are the ones that are sending old people to their deaths by forcing them to live alongside COVID-19 patients. If you don't care for life at its beginning, I suppose maybe you don't much care for it at the end either.
Okay, now, amen. That's exactly right. Okay, now, as far as the stimulus is concerned, how can that be sustained, and how do we get it so that, I mean, we're hearing about all kinds of abuses where small businesses are going out of business because they're just not getting enough. And then meanwhile, big companies are actually getting some of this money that was earmarked for the small businesses. It's a mess. It's a total mess.
It is, and it's an entirely predictable mess. If somebody had asked me 3-4 months ago, or say right before the pandemic, hey, what would you think if we just gave the federal government an opportunity to spend another $3-5 trillion just out of the blue? Do you think they would spend that well? And, of course, I would say, wait a minute. I mean, what they spend now is not spent well. You give them in the midst of a crisis trillions more, you're going to have all kinds of problems, cronyism, corruption, poor allocation of resources. So I would have entirely predicted it. Any good economist would have. And it's an argument, really, for opening things up quicker rather than later, because the longer we keep things locked down, the more that government is going to squander resources. It's going to put future generations deep into debt, and it's going to prevent people from creating the wealth and growing their businesses that really is ultimately the only answer to this economic meltdown.
Okay, we have 30 seconds left. FEE.org is your website. Lawrence Reed is our guest. And we'll have you back on sometime to talk about your new book, Was Jesus a Socialist? How about a closing thought, though, on the whole meltdown and our economic problems?
Well, first of all, thanks for promoting my new book, Was Jesus a Socialist? People can get that now at major bookstore websites. Well, I'm very concerned that so many Americans at the moment are ready to accept what some of these draconian measures governors are imposing and the federal government is imposing for a little temporary security. I hope Americans bounce back and realize that, hey, Ben Franklin was right when he said a little temporary security is not worth throwing your freedom to the wind.
Wow. Lawrence Reed, FEE.org. Thanks so much for being with us, Lawrence.
Thank you, Jerry.
Okay, bye-bye now.